Hey y'all, it's Neil. Welcome back to Storytelling for Content Design. Before we get into this South by Southwest AI recap, I just want to stop and say thanks so much to everybody for listening. I owe you the hugest shout out. I'm not going to share the exact numbers or anything, but I'm going to just say that it's this small, intimate, solid, consistent group of listeners who constantly are pinging me and asking questions, getting passionate. And really, that's all that matters to me. I'm not trying to make the biggest, brightest, bestest podcast in all of the land right now. I'm just really passionate about what's going on when it comes to AI, AR, and content strategy. And, you know, I have a lot of theories. I have a lot of things to talk about. And so you just tuning in right now is all that makes me happy, whether it's 2 people or 100. But I can say that it is a substantial amount of listeners, and I'm just happy and I'm just thrilled. And, you know, I mean, content designers, content strategists, brand strategists, marketers, you know, we're kind of like a small village of people, right? Like, we like to kind of nerd out on things, geek out on things, ask questions, kind of dig in and come up with theories. So if that's what you're getting out of this podcast, that's what makes me happy. So hopefully this keeps your imagination going, keeps you passionate about what's next. And again, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm just super, super grateful for everyone that's been listening. I have such an exciting episode coming up here. Instead of going out and trying to jam out at every party at South by Southwest, I took notes during a lot of the AI panels, and my goal was to just kind of come home, get all those thoughts together, get on the mic, and give y'all something of substance that you can look forward to and carry into the rooms that you're in. So thanks for listening, and let's get into this South by recap episode. Hello, hello. Welcome back to Storytelling for Content Design. My name is Neil Petty. Thank you again for tuning in. South by Southwest 2023. I was there. I was able to get an interactive badge and I attended and I went headfirst into the AI panels with my little content strategy hat on, and it was awesome. I want to just say, you know, South by this year was a little bit of tough timing, right? I think the panels for South by come in the year before around summer, July or August. And, you know, if you've been paying attention, so much has happened since literally November to now. We've got the economy. We've got ChatGPT coming about. We've got Midjourney and all of the DALL-E and the visual prompting that's going on and circulating. Wow, wow, words galore, right? Like, isn't this cool? Like, seeing everybody using words to create things? I mean, first of all, that just gets me super jazzed up. But I think a big window might have gotten missed with South by this year just because of the timing of the panels. But there were plenty around AI, and they were very interesting. I do recommend going to South by maybe next year. I think that's when people are going to have a lot of demos, when people are going to want to show some things off. There's going to be some numbers to share and a lot of findings to get at after kind of the smoke clears from ChatGPT. Well, you know, I think ChatGPT-4 is out now, so is the smoke going to clear? Who knows? Maybe we're just blazing into this new era and new stuff is learned every day. But I think next year South by is going to be great. But this one was great. I attended a ton of panels. I attended OpenAI co-founder Greg Brockton spoke. I went to an AI and Future of Journalism panel, which featured people from Twitter and the Associated Press. I went to an Operationalizing Empathy panel for AI, which had some folks from Qualtrics and some other consultancies talking about operational approaches to empathy and what AI is going to do with that. That was a really good one. Building an AI Business with Jasper AI co-founder Dave Rogenmoser. That is a big AI Austin company here. They're backed by Y Combinator, and they're one of the generative text AI platforms that are blowing up. And then finally, the Ephemeral Applications and AI panel from Mark Ralston from Argo Design, which is a design shop here in Austin. And all of these were great. And so I don't want to go through each of them one by one. That seems a little boring to me, but what I want to do is kind of thread the needle a bit and produce some pillars of thought that I think you're going to connect with and get and understand. And really, this comes from purely that content strategy perspective. I think when it comes to AI, There are a lot of questions. Everyone really wants answers right now, and I don't think everyone in these panels were able to really give it because we're still trying to figure things out. But there are some themes that I was able to spot, and I am really excited to elaborate on those with you. So again, this coming strictly from my content strategy perspective, thinking like a UX writer, thinking like a words person who I've been doing this for like 15 years now. And I think, you know, if you've been in the same flight seat, you'll start to see these trends too over the next year. So let's get into it. All right. So my first observation, my first pillar is content is king again. So content people come forth, right? I think, you know, content is now king again. And I know that was a catchphrase maybe a decade ago when the web was blowing up. But I think now people are starting to obsess over words and output that we can do with AI. And as I went to these panels, you know, I sat with people from all types of backgrounds and disciplines, and I tend to talk to folks, as you can probably imagine. I'm a talkative person. And most of them, I would explain to them what I do. I say I'm a content designer. I work in content strategy, UX writing and copy and all of that. And they all were like, oh, yeah, our resident person is the head of all of that stuff. And we look to them to be the leader on how all of it works. If you're like me, you didn't waste any time when ChatGPT came out. You started experimenting with it. You started creating prompts, figuring out how they work. I've actually been doing seminars on prompting, actually. I just did one here at WeWork here in Austin, cross-blending brand strategy with some ChatGPT prompting. I've done consultations with the content marketing team at Slack, Giant Noise, a big PR agency here in Austin, and then I've got some others on the way. So I've been doing my best to get in front of it. So getting into the panels a bit, two sentences came out from Greg Brockman, the co-founder of OpenAI, that stood out to me. One was, every business is a language business, which was a mind-blowing statement from Greg. And then the other thing that he said later in his panel was that now everyone's kind of a copy director. And I was like, yes, absolutely. If we think about ChatGPT as not taking the wheel, but someone who's kind of riding shotgun, that is exactly what we have. We have sort of an assistant that we can boss around. And this even goes for some of our more junior, mid-level folks who are still getting their start in their careers. They're going to have this assistance tool. And what was funny is, as Greg was saying this, ChatGPT-4 was getting announced on Twitter. It was starting to get swell about everything that it could do, that it could, you know, pass the bar and things like that. So I was like, wow, great timing, OpenAI. But back to that statement, every business is a language business. I think that couldn't be more further from the truth, right? I think we've learned as content designers that words drive everything, whether we're designing something in Figma or whether we're producing a story, words have to ride along with that. So, you know, we're getting at this era of AI, and I know that everyone's obsessive and they're doing a lot of experimentation, but my thinking is that will start to wear down and people will start to fall back on what they do best. So if they don't like words, they're going to like analytics and data and math and code. If, you know, they don't like that, then they're going to like words. If they don't like words, they're going to like art. So we're still going to have that need for specialists. At the AI and Future of Journalism panel, Amy Reinhart, who is the AI program manager for Associated Press, she mentioned something interesting. She predicts that small publications, so 2 to 3 person type publications or media outlets that never have a chance to have a marketing department or never have the capacity to have a giant writing staff, can now use something like ChatGPT to expand that. So you start to think about it, you know, I envision this room full of journalists and maybe an editor or two starting to act as sort of marketing content strategists because they have ChatGPT that they can use as a tool to get that output, to do things like their social post to promote an article, or to do things like write an article at scale in a way that they can put it on the homepage and then also go deeper for the long form. You get the idea here. And I think, once again, journalists and article writers, they're just like us. They love words, they work with words, and if they're not just single-handedly writing an article, they are finding ways to use AI to scale the article, which is really cool. Dave Rogenmoser at Jasper AI, you know, he went through his whole talk about how he came to create Jasper AI, which might be the scariest one out of all, you know, when it comes to us as writers and particularly for copywriters. But he did mention that they are starting to roll out a brand voice feature, as it was a customer pain point that a lot of, he didn't say this, but what I'm assuming is that a lot of the output from Jasper was starting to get a little monotonous. So, you know, brands and CEOs wanted a bit more consistency across all their words, you know, across their entire organization, and wanted Jasper AI as a platform to start doing that. And I thought that was interesting because when it comes to brand voice, and you've heard me talk about this on a lot of my previous episodes, you know, that can get a little subjective, right? Like, what is brand voice and who really is nailing it? I think that still kind of comes down to a need for like a human check and balance to say, yeah, that's right, or no, that word is wrong. Again, fine-tuning and getting the copy better and better is a never-ending job, even if you do it at an expert level. But my summary is, once again, content is king again, and content people know the lay of the land. So if you love content, and I think you'll naturally love working with AI. Again, when it comes to prompt creation, it takes a word lover, it takes a storyteller to make AI content that people will love. And my point is that, you know, people are aware that we as wordsmiths and we as storytellers are the ones who are really paying attention to that stuff and really paying attention to the substance. So we will be still probably on the hook to show how a good prompt looks, how fine-tuning a good ChatGPT model looks. And so, and at the end of the day, that's not everyone's bag. Not everybody in a company is obsessed with words and obsessed with storytelling. Okay, so my second kind of theme that I saw is one that I call, am I driving the car? Or is the car driving me? And this one is about transparency with AI and ethics. Obviously, that is a big thing. OpenAI came out of the gate saying, you know, we're here to put some guardrails and ethics around the evolution of AI, you know, so that way it's approachable and that way it's done for good and for the advancement of good and the human race in general. But what I'm seeing, and this came up through a lot of the questions that people ask, is that there's going to be a need for a general disclaimer or some sort of stamp or statement that shows users and shows your customers that you are now interacting with AI content or you're reading something that's generated with AI. And I'm not just talking about the quintessential chatbot that pops up and says, hi, I'm just a bot, da da da. No, I'm thinking this is something that you're going to have to kind of show people in advance as they peruse or enter a state where they're looking at AI-driven content. This came up a ton, particularly in the operationalizing empathy panel. That came up a lot, also in the journalism for AI panel. But it came from questions from the audience, and I think what's happening is that we can't lie to ourselves and not think that people aren't also aware that we're entering this phase of AI. And so trust is becoming super, super sensitive. It can be a make or break moment for brands and user experiences. And really, people are aware of this, and so they're gonna need to see something, some sort of disclaimer or statement that says, hey, this came from an AI, or you are now interacting with content that is AI generated, but here's how we do it. I think there's gonna be a need for that claim, so that way people know when they're not driving the car anymore, when the car is driving them, so to speak, and they're starting to see algorithmically produced content driven by an AI, and they're kind of crossing over into that world. It's only fair, right? So that way people understand what's going on. I think, you know, we're seeing that with almost every website you see cookies, you know, hey, you're tracking me, so you're getting my data. I think it's, think about that on steroids. I see a lot of different brands starting to compete with that and coming up with their own sort of claim for their AI, kind of like how fashion brands talk about how they source their materials, right? I see it kind of being like that. Like, how do you source and create AI content in an ethical way. Again, OpenAI has really pushed that. A lot of the good companies are really pushing that. And there are tons out there that are trying to kind of get in front of this. This reminds me a lot of accessibility, inclusivity with your writing, and all the things that we deal with as content strategists and writers and content designers. So again, am I driving the car or is the car driving me? That's what I like to call it, those two kind of states of mind there. And I think we owe that to our users and audience in a cool and unique way. Third, old content, new shoes. This one is for all my taxonomy and content governance nerds out there. You're gonna love this one. So David Smydra from Twitter, he was at the Future of Journalism for AI panel, and he talked about how his team at Twitter was responsible for taking existing articles and really starting to break them down and codify them. Hello, content audit, right? Their team was able to start to break that down, codify that content so that way they can use it and scale it out. And I see the same starting to happen for AI tools, right? I think that any way that content strategists can step in, start to take legacy content, start to define the anatomy of them. Part of what I do in prompts is I try to train people on what's the anatomy of a piece of content. So teaching them to think like content strategists. So it could be anything, articles, notifications, landing pages. How would you reverse engineer that content so that way you can back it into AI so it can leverage it in the right way? I think, you know, if you have a body of content, you know, 50 or so articles, that's what David Smydra was talking about, was that how his team stepped forward and started to define that content for the tools of the day. And that is what helped increase his team's impact. And so I think any content design team that can step forward and start to see it with that AI prompt lens or see it with that lens to make legacy content in an audit or whatever you want to do, useful and usable at scale and something that AI can start to kind of piece together and make sense out of it, that's what's going to really rule and that's what's going to win. Funny thing that got people laughing was Greg Brockman from ChatGPT talked about how the old GPT model used Amazon reviews to gather its first data set, which I thought that was interesting. The interviewer was like, oh, cool, we're all here because of Amazon reviews. So the whole room lit up at that one. That was funny. But the operationalizing empathy panel, the panelists talked about also scraping thousands and thousands of customer service calls to understand and sense when customers would get angry. So they were starting to kind of look at the anatomy of an actual audio phone call and when the user would start to lose their cool and when things would get tense. And so really trying to be empathetic in those right moments. So again, when it comes to, you know, site redesigns and re-engineering content that's existing, how might we take something like that and reverse engineer it for things like prompts and AI for content at scale? So that one's kind of a more technical one, but I call it old content, new shoes. And so keep an eye on it. Last but not least, and probably my favorite, is the theme human after all. I think all of the panels I attended really had this wrap up where there is a need for what Amy described as the human in the loop. And that's Amy Reinhart from AP. The human in the loop factor is something that has to happen as a final check and balance to make sure that we are empathetic for the person at the other end of the line, our users, our customers. Mark Ralston from Argo Design, he had a brilliant start with this presentation and walked through probably about 30 different prompts that he used for a user experience him and his team documented and put together. Oh my gosh, phones were up taking photos of that like crazy. But at the very end, he held up a slide with the Mona Lisa and said that things like the Mona Lisa are still going to happen. And for whatever reason, we as humans are going to gravitate towards those things that we need that are authentic. The operationalizing for empathy panel was obviously loud and clear here. We talked about all this automation is going to lead to us having to be even more emotionally intelligent. And I think that's no secret when it comes to design. And we really have to start having a vision for what people are feeling and their cognitive behavior at a given moment when they're interacting with some sort of AI-generated content, or maybe they're getting too much information or things are being overshared. Like, we're not always going to want that. I don't think that's always going to be the case. And so we have to have that human hat that we put on. And it just makes sense, you know? I think we are in a very hyperactive state right now where we want to put AI on everything, but what are we really offering value for, and are we doing it at the right time? So we have to empathize for that, and that's why I think design, content design, and wordsmiths and people that are natural storytellers, as I've said in all of my episodes, that's going to be crucial. They're going to be the ones to really wrap this up and say yes and no and be the deciders for human empathy and what we all need. So once again, at the very end of the day, human after all. All right, well, that's it, y'all. Those are my three things. You know, we've got human after all. We've got old content, new shoes. We've got, am I driving the car or is the car driving me? And then lastly, content is king, and content people are the ones who are going to know the lay of the land. So stick to your guns. It's going to get really, really exciting. I just want to end with a note. I went to a Disney panel. I always do. They really always make me happy. It had lightsabers, Tinkerbell, robots, all these great things coming out to interact with the audience. But the panelists said something great, which was happiness makes memories. And so I think while our users and our audience do sort of, you know, when they become frustrated or whatnot, yes, they remember that, but they also don't forget when we create experiences that make them happy. And we can't forget that. I think no matter what, when it comes to AI, it's all about right place, right time, right reason, and the right content. And we need to use it to make people happier and serendipitously help them in their lives and do the things they want to do. So with that, I want to thank you so much for listening to my South by Southwest AI for Content Strategy wrap-up. Email me, sfcdpodcast@gmail.com, if you have any questions. I think this is a really exciting time. I've got more coming out. The next episode, we're going to dig into an AI-driven launch that came out recently. I'm happy to nerd out about it. So more to come on AI, more to come with content design, and thanks so much and have an awesome day. Storytelling for Content Design is a podcast from Yodo, who brings your brand story to life through the power of words. Yodo is a brand storytelling consultancy who specializes in the voice, personality, and statements that make your products and your team stand out. Find out more at yodocreative.com.